All right. Oh, we got three spaces on the screen and only two of us. Well, here she is, Pumi Mashiko.
Hello, folks. Good morning.
Yeah, we got a busy, busy day today. There's lots of good stuff happening on the show, among other things. We've got Bantu Holomisa coming in a little bit later.
The general.
The general. I was asking you how I should address him because it's changed over the years.
Yeah, it must always be Genene.
Genene.
Yes, the general. I think that's the
closer
version of general.
I'll just have to go over it in my head a couple of times because the man, I mean, he's got a history, you know. He's got an incredible history.
And today, what a day to have him here.
Yes.
Because last night as we went to bed, the Takatso deal has fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the people. He was one of the people who were front and center in the questioning of that deal. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to have. That's my first question that I want to hear about, how he's feeling this morning.
No problemo. We'll, the floor is yours. We did a little event last night, and Pumi and I were at dinner until 11.
Yeah,
maybe 11:30.
No, it definitely wasn't 11:30 for me because
you sure?
Because when I got home and had to get like ready for this morning, I eventually Leslie, because you are important to us, dear listener. You are important to us, so we have to get ready, and because I've made an effort about the no black. It was easy yesterday.
Let's just be clear, Pumi's not saying that she's cut black people out of her life. She's cut black clothing because she used to be a bit like I've tried it various times in my life. I've never got it right like you did. But for a long time, you were one of those people who always wore black.
I still do, just not on the show.
Oh, okay. So it's part of the...
It's all for you is to just...
I know. Last night you had some resplendent pink going on in the hair.
I had to like pack out my stuff, but I got home and it was nice. And I'm glad I did though, because this morning when I woke up and there was no lights, my stuff was packed out.
Well, after a very inspiring but extremely long day, I spent like an hour and a half in traffic yesterday morning, which I haven't done for a while. So that was challenging, let's put it that way. Got home last night in the dark and there was no light. Challenging. I think there's some parts of Johannesburg that have now for, I don't want to get this wrong because then they'll get even more cross. But you know what? It's now, as I said to JJ Tabani, chatfol. People in this country are chatfol.
Yeah.
It's enough. We've had it. Doesn't matter what the governing party, I don't want to call them the ruling party, what they tell us about a good story
they
to
should
tell.
Never Remember be called stuff? They should never be called the ruling party. No. Nobody, because that's not what they are. They're not rulers, they're government.
Correct. Government. That's my favorite word.
Lendota.
Government.
Hulumeni.
Okay, so one of the other things that we're going to have today is... we're going to have a couple of minutes with a really, really powerful and incredibly talented and really important ad man. Somebody who's been in the business for a long, long time. He knows South Africa's advertising business like the back of his hand. And I think he probably has lessons for all of us. There's going to be a lot to talk to him about. That's Mike Abel popping in a little bit later on. But we've had a really busy week. And Pums is also... doing a little thing that she hasn't done. I once went on a tour of Soweto with Pumi some time ago.
You know, I have a little group on my phone.
That's where I met your, parents in that trip.
Remember I said on the show that I'm happy to take anybody who wants to come. I have a little group on my... And then COVID came and we never went.
Right.
And then at one of the events, Hermine, who's a regular in the comment section... came up to me to say, you know, I was one of the first people that responded to that thing. And I said, so I resuscitated it and I have a little group. Do you know what the biggest thing has been with that group? Getting all of us together on a single day to get to, and there's only 9 of us. There's only 9 people in that group and we can't agree. Or then the holidays are coming and then this.
And people can't agree. And also, I mean, this is why whenever you get... a family gathering together, whenever you manage to get more than four or five of your friends together in one place, whenever
that's
you manage to...
That's why it takes like 6 months.
Yeah, anybody who's in the event business, I just want to give you some credit today because pulling off an event, we had like 110 people at this thing we did yesterday, which more of which you will hear about.
Even that many? That
is, yeah.
It was a...
It's a hard thing to wrangle people, and there were some very important, very busy people there. There were some people who are prolific as hell. They're writers and they're thinkers, and there were people there who are captains of industry.
Yes, I did quite a lot of celebrity spotting.
There was a bit of that going on yesterday too. So we'll tell you about that in time. I'm not leaving anyone out, I promise, because the most important people in the world for us are the people who are listening to this show, and you'll get first glimpse of any of that stuff. So I don't want to spoil it by talking too much about something which sounds ethereal and numinous and not clear at this point. We'll get to exactly what it is and share it all with you shortly.
I am excited about the trip this morning.
Mm.
I am excited about the trip this morning because I haven't done it in a long time. And 2 days ago... Yeah, on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I actually went on a little recce.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
you've been preparing.
Yeah.
I went on a little recce. I suddenly thought, you take these things for granted, right? You drive past a place, you're like, I wonder if they opened after COVID. Let me go in.
That's a good check.
Let me go in. I wonder if they've cut the weeds.
Well, I know when I went on that tour, and Pumi, by the way, in case you don't know, the Sowetan newspaper was named after her. That's how she knows the place.
I wish.
So first time I went, and the only time I've been on that tour, because it's a one of a kind, we went to your parents' house. It was the first time I had a maguinha, which I remember very well. We went down and you told me where they get it from, the shop down the road.
And we went to the shop down the road.
We had the authentic experience. None of this tour bus full of like people with cameras from Japan stopping at like Hector Peterson's memorial, and you know, yeah, this is the real thing. So a fascinating little detour. I mean, I've been to Soweto since then, but if I hadn't had that orientation with you, like, wouldn't have made any sense. So we got lots to get to this morning and plenty in the news too. I don't know where you want to start this morning for me. You brought up Kate Middleton the other day.
I have to, Gareth. I have to.
Yeah.
Because it is now the last thread holding me onto X.
Oh, God.
Is waiting for the
Kate Middleton. Really? I mean, of all the things, you know, I thought that I've said for the longest time that this Kate Middleton is the, thank God she's the sanity. She's the only person in that royal family who behaves like a royal.
Wow.
No, despite not being born in the family, I've always thought she's classy as hell. She's got her shit together.
I am not a Kate fan, so let's just start there. But I have to, this is what I need to actually talk to you. Do you know about Ukthwala? Do you know what that is? When you use magic to attain your wealth, right? One of the things about it, Ukthwala, you have to.
This is what Gogo Maweni and Gogo Skoteni.
Yeah,
are
that's
both.
What all of those.
They're very good at doing this stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
supposedly.
But it. But in that realm, in that world.
Sorry, when we learned about customary law at university, that's how long ago it was called, customary law, for example. I mean, Ukuthwala was a system
that is
where there was payment in form of cattle, you know, in those days, for if a man abducted a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm not completely off the mark.
No, so that is a different type of Ukthwala.
Yeah, and then right? That was like a compensation for... Yeah, yeah.
Which still happens where in the Eastern Cape, in in Lesotho, in those areas, it's still a practice where a young man or old man might see a young woman that they fancy.
Mm.
And then they just... The Sotho word is to shubedisa.
Just take it.
And then they take the girl and... Take her to wherever their family homestay.
And the family, right?
Then
they can actually go, hey.
Where's my child?
I mean, it's just unbelievable. But then in compensation, customary law forces those people to make payment and to return the girl if, you know, certain standards aren't met.
So, but this Ugutwala, there was some time ago on Twitter, there was a very, when it was still Twitter, a whole thing about the snake, you know, about people who have a snake, which is what gives them their money. So Ugutwala is also about that. It's
again,
about,
Gogo Maweni. Like,
about this attainment of wealth using paranormal.
Yes.
but the thing about Ugutwala is it comes with a pit, right? Whether it's a snake.
Like a familiar.
Or a
witch's familiar.
Like a familiar. But if you die and you haven't selected somebody in your family to pass on this familiar to, and then it's got nobody looking after it, and it gets hungry because they must be fed, and what it will do is it will take your wealth with it. So as it shrivels up and dies, it'll take everything that you had attained. So your family won't have the same level of wealth and prosperity because they're not taking care of the pet. Just stay with me.
I'm totally with you. In fact, so far I'm knee deep in it. I mean, I believe this is probably a good reason for pets to be looked after, if nothing else.
So Lizzie,
the Queen,
did she have a?
She had corgis.
Did she have a snake? Was she?
She had a snake. I mean, you could say that they're reptilians.
Had one?
No, well,
that she was, and she forgot to pass it on and the care instructions to Charles. And so now Charlie hasn't been doing what he's supposed to be doing. And now the snake is taking back.
What is it?
Its wealth and prosperity and bringing down that entire.
I've got to tell you, like, that's a great theory because I've heard no good theories up to now. And I'm sorry for those people who don't give a damn about the royal family, because in this particular instance, I don't either. But I see this stuff going on. I mean, I've seen respectable people. I interviewed Brendan O'Neill the other day, consider him a smart guy. He had to write an article about Kate Middleton. And he's not the kind of guy who would. And I suddenly thought, this is something that I maybe should try to figure out what's going on here. So she went into hospital for routine abdominal surgery at some point. That's what they said.
And then they should be recovering till after Easter.
Yeah, they mentioned that she'd taken till Easter before she resumed her duties. I thought, that's a long time.
That is a long time.
She's a mother of three.
An abdominal.
Sure, she's mother of three. She's she's busy.
And advanced in age.
Well, to say that, I think she's younger than me, so just careful what you say and you. She's got a lot to do because, as we discussed in a previous discussion around this very thing, I can't believe we've had more than one. There are only about four really working royals at the moment because they can't use Andrew because he's friends with Epstein. They can't use Harry because he and Meghan are in America. So they're down to like a skeleton staff in the royal family.
And now, after like three engagements, Camilla's
needed a break. Leave. She's like, I need a ciggy and a glass of whiskey and I'm out. Charles has got the cancer scare, so he's also out for a lot of this stuff. So it's down to, it's like William and like Edward and Sophie. I mean, people are like, who? They're holding the fort. So people are speculating that something really mysterious has happened and Kate is...
So there are Reddit threads. You
go
know,
on.
When there's a Reddit thread, then it's...
Enlighten me.
I only fell into that kind of rabbit hole a couple of days ago. That actually Kate hasn't been seen since like Christmas Day.
Oh.
So they had a Christmas walkabout of some sort. And then that's it. She hasn't been seen since then. There are videos of a little like convoy. A royal convoy leaving one of the palaces on the 28th with an ambulance.
Sure.
I'm telling you guys,
There's a lot going on here.
In those corgis that old Lizzie used to like run around with, one of those corgis, because I know they say it's a snake, right? But it can be anything.
Can be any animal.
I'm telling you.
Well,
I'm telling you, Ubetwele, and now that she's gone, nobody's looking after her, and it's all coming, crumbling down. And she got it from her dad, and she looked after it.
This is why
she did not want to give Charles.
Let this be a lesson to anyone who is not preparing for their succession plan.
Just tell your family where your stuff is.
And your succession plan in work. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Keep your shit together. Look, I don't know how much of this is true and how much is nonsense. We'll probably find out in due course because they can't hide things forever. But they have been odd. And then there was this photo that appeared. Promise we'll move on after this. There was this photo that appeared. No, I had to go down the rabbit hole. Don't laugh at me.
I've been so busy and I've been
doing really, really cool stuff and I have to fucking read about Kate Middleton and her. Anyway, there's this photo that came out where they've seen like there was some photoshopping being done, but like minor little bits
it's
and pieces.
It's not minor.
Okay, well you describe it. I don't know anything about photoshopping. I really don't.
Badly photoshopped, and the fashion girlies actually have cracked this one where the picture of because it was Mother's Day in the UK.
It was Kate and her three kids.
It was Mother's Day in the UK on Sunday. So she posted a picture of herself with the three kids. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. And it was kind of, this was supposed to be the image that placates all of us following the disastrous image of her in the car where everyone was like, is she bloated? Is that her? Is that Papa?
Jesus.
Is that?
Okay.
This could all be solved.
If they showed us the original photo.
No.
Because that's what Piers Morgan was screaming for. Publish the real photo.
If she just had a small show up and wave at the people, even if she's sitting in a wheelchair for crying out loud. She gave birth and within like 6 hours, she was standing outside with the little baby, like with some makeup. And if she could do that, she could like show up and just wave at the people after minor abdominal surgery.
I don't know how to answer this because that's made it more complicated. And Pumi's right. Like if there's an easy solution to this, why not use it? The other thing, and I hate to admit this too, because I got home late last night, tired, and I was sitting in bed and replying to messages that I hadn't had a chance to all day. We all go through this. I'm not looking for any sympathy. But then I got railroaded by another story, which Candace Owens was talking about yesterday. You heard about this? Brigitte Macron? So, wait, what's happened to my camera here? So, I don't know what to say about this one. So, Brigitte Macron, that's Emmanuel Macron's wife.
Oh, Candace.
She is a man, according to...
Oh, Candace.
No, not according to Candace. According to other people on the internet.
Oh, Candace.
Yeah. Pumi.
Candy baby.
No, Pums. And she said, look, not her theory, but she went down a rabbit hole.
Oh,
and she's now found, like there are pictures of Macron's wife when she was very little. She's a 70-year-old woman or something.
Oh, candy baby.
And they're saying, she could have been a man. She could have been a man. Emmanuel Macron's wife could have been a man. I mean, really, I don't know what to say to this.
And Candace is now, but she's digging in.
Oh,
her
she's going there. She's going all the way in. Fuck, I don't know what to make of the world.
I'm ready for the aliens.
Kate's face is swapped from Vanity Fair cover she appeared on a few years ago. If you're that sick, you won't be wearing skinny jeans. Good heavens, what a theory about the royal family.
guys.
He's married to a man, says Mutande, who's also clearly in on that. I've seen the photo. It's really not that bad, says Carl. Also, who gives an actual fuck about a photo, really? Hey, people do.
Carl.
Who cares, says Arthur. Boring and bloated. They're all boring. Let's not forget what happened to Princess Diana. Respect her privacy. Let her rest, for God's sake. You act like asses, says Marnie. You know what?
No. No.
People aren't going to leave them alone. And if they if they want to put this away for good, as Piers Morgan said, just show us the original photo.
Because the original photo, so the big hoopla about that particular photo and the fact that it was manipulated, you know how everyone talks about the AI and the images and the fingers and all of that. So that was one of the stuff, yes. The sleeve, the photoshopping, the face, yeah. the this, all of that. What she was wearing, because also there are people, guys, we just need to shut down every investigative police service in the world, and we need to like let it loose on Twitter. They will always find, they'll find the pieces, they'll find the truth, they'll find the girls, the fashion girlies on TikTok are the ones that were speaking about the top that the girl was wearing, Charlotte, the top she was wearing, and how it was actually photoshopped and made darker because that particular sweater is only made in one color. And if nothing else, it's entertainment, people. It's entertainment.
Well, I've had enough. And I promise you, we've only scratched the surface here of what you're going to find on the internet if you go into either of these things, the Kate Middleton reality show or the Brigitte Macron, which has just started. So there's going to be a lot of that. It's unbelievable. So I'm so glad. I say this with dripping sarcasm. I'm so glad you brought me into the Kate world. You wanted to talk about Edwin Sodi. A lot of people want to talk about Edwin Sodi. What's going on here?
You know, it's getting harder and harder to be...
How do you finish that sentence?
To be optimistic.
Yeah.
And believe in process and justice and. And Edwin Sodi, guys. Edwin Sodi is... So a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard that his assets, including his house, were taken by the Asset Forfeiture Unit.
Yeah. Those guys haven't been doing a lot for a while, have they? They've been quiet.
Well, they've been... Part of they you know, linked with the SIU, they've been doing quite a lot of work, kind of recovering, monies scammed out.
Just
of
remind
the
everybody who Edwin Sodi is.
So Edwin Sodi, Herman Mashaba spoke about Edwin Sodi here last week as well, and the deal that he got from Tshwane to build a water reticulation system and purification, blah, 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 which is why there's still a problem. He got the deal. He got paid some money up front. Still hasn't been built, amongst other things. So Edwin Sodi is a tenderpreneur with a whole lot of dodgy deals over the years from various places. So he's a multi-millionaire. There is an incredibly, amazingly beautiful house in Bryanston.
Yeah.
That has a view of Joburg that is
to die for.
To die for. With an infinity pool, and it's got like a koi pond with 100 koi. It's everything.
Sure.
This is one of those. Remember when when we still had top billing? This is one of those like top billing type houses. That house of his with 75 million rand was seized by the Asset Forfeiture Unit a couple of weeks ago, and he was losing his cars. He also, as these people do, have a penchant for vehicles.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, reported in the news, this man has apparently gone back to the Asset Forfeiture Unit and for cash, 75 million rand cash, has purchased back this...
His stuff.
No, not all his stuff, but the house, definitely. I was so mad.
Why?
Because why are his assets not frozen? When we know that this man has no other employment, when we know that all his money has been made under all of these dodgy deals, why is there a bank that is accepting, because he didn't have this money. 3 weeks ago. So now he has it all of a sudden. Where did it come from? Who sent him the money? What bank is accepting this money? And why is there no like ping somewhere on a computer?
Why do we do Fika? Why do we bother with all this stuff?
You must just forget to submit your Fika document to FNB.
You'll be in big trouble.
For 2 months. But
guy can get stuff back from the assets forfeiture unit.
Cash, 75 million rand cash. Buying his house back. I am so mad. And that's why I'm saying it makes it harder to believe in justice, to believe in this country having people who want to do the right thing, whether they are in government, whether they are in private sector, because there's a lot of people in this chain, right? There's a bank is a private business.
Sure.
They're part of this team.
But it again shows you that there are two South Africas, not in the way that Thabo Mbeki said, because Thabo Mbeki used to say there are two South Africas. There's, you know, rich people in the first world, and he said they're poor people in the third world.
Funny, I thought about that today, morning.
But Thabo Mbeki's version is a bit simplistic, because actually there are rich and poor South Africans. The difference is that the law applies completely differently. And if you are very wealthy and very influential, very connected, you don't even when they come to seize your assets, because they are the law, you can buy them back because you have that much money and that much clout. I mean, must be good to know Edwin Sodi, though.
I was actually so pissed off yesterday, which is it's hard to get me to that place where I'm actually so pissed off that I am unable what are you doing?
I'm just trying to get your
so the people can see the radio in the back.
No, because they want to see you in all your glory.
But it's really, really hard to get me to that place where I'm so mad and so angry and so disappointed.
Well, I'm sorry I brought it up then, okay?
It's okay.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
But now the people can also be mad with me.
Well, if you have something to say about Edwin Sodi, of course, let us know. So Arthur Cedric Meyer, let me get it right, says, Sodi's house with a view of Johannesburg. What the hell? As far as there's not much of a view in Johannesburg, says Arthur. Who wants a view of a shithole?
Arthur,
you're looking for trouble, hey? We will not have... I presume Arthur lives in some glorious part of Cape Town.
Arthur, we will shut your mic off.
Yeah. But okay, go for it. Rules for thee and not for me, ne? Says Congo Chris. Correct. Okay, well, I want us to turn our attention to somebody who's popped in all the way from beautiful Cape Town to see us, but he's no stranger to Johannesburg. The founder and executive chairman of MNC Saatchi Able, which is a marketing and advertising group for the Africa region, non-executive chairman of Irish-based innovative AI research firm Sens. Amazing. Amazing that you could find some time to be with us. Mike Abel, how nice to see you. And thank you for coming, by the way. Thank you. Thank
Which
you.
Is a, it's a lot for a Cape Townian to be up and dressed up
Don't
and
give
in
him.
The studio at this time of the morning.
It
well
sure
done
is.
To you.
It's great to be here. Thank
Don't
you.
Give him a hard time about being Cape Townian. No, Mike, it's really nice to talk to you. I mean, you're a legendary ad man, but there's so much more that we want to talk to you about. And I'm curious about, you know, your book, which the last time we had you on, we were doing something to do with like who we really are as South Africans.
Yeah.
And we've had a bumpy road the last couple of years.
Sure have.
But you've written this book called Willing and Able, which I thought was really interesting, and it was timeous, and I think it helped a lot of South Africans to kind of figure out where they are in the current mess or opportunity that we're in. Mm. And you said the subtitle was Lessons from a Decade in Crisis. So for people who haven't read the book and where your thoughts are now, add the new chapter that you've probably been working on in your head, but also tell us what the book was about and why you brought it out at that time, because I think it's a good place to start.
Fantastic, thanks. So I came back from running the MNC Saatchi Group in Australia towards the end of 2009. I had co-led the Ogilvy Group prior to going to Australia. And when I got back, there was enormous excitement in the country around the World Cup that was coming up and so much hope for the country, albeit obviously that we had the Zuma presidency, if you can call it that, at the time. And I started my company from scratch in a downturned economy, in an overtraded market. And I believed in South Africa. I believed in the economy. I thought I was going to be able to create something, and we have. But I guess what I wanted to do was to capture not just the successes, but the trials and tribulations, I guess, in starting a company from scratch.
Sure.
In believing that there is still great opportunity to do something meaningful in South Africa, because aside from the Rugby World Cup, people were down. At the time, we had load shedding. Fortunately, scrap that.
Yeah, Pumi got home to it last night and woke up to it this morning. So did I. So yeah.
Oh no. And we had corruption at the. Okay, I'll scrap that. We had so basically, the picture I'm painting is that for the last, well, I've been back 14 years now, and the problems that we encountered then are the same problems we have now. Mm. And yet people have muddled on with their lives. Some people have built fantastic companies. You know, kids have got great educations, albeit obviously the massive challenges in education. So I really wanted to bring a bit of perspective to it in terms of there is always an opportunity to make something, to create something, to grow something if you lean into the positive. And I guess what we're seeing right now is the last 5 years, let's say, or going on six, so much unfulfilled hope and so much unfulfilled promise in the country, and yet all of our underlying assets remain exactly the same. I mean, this is a country waiting to boom. This is a country waiting to give employment to the 50% youth that don't currently have employment. And it's all solvable. It just needs the right people to solve that problem, or to want to solve the problem. I think more is the point.
That's exactly what we need to hear this morning, because there are plenty of us who are we can so easily be pulled into the negative.
Yeah.
And look, there's a difference between being sensible and realistic.
Yeah.
And not hiding your head in the sand when you see bad things, or pretending everything's going to be all right and whistling past the graveyard. But the only people who make the world better are the optimists, because if we just listened to the pessimists, we would have no reason to carry on. We'd all just be mired in depression.
Mm.
So you want to get things done. You want to make your 100%. Life better. You want to make the world better. You have to be a little bit optimistic. And what I like about people like you, and there are few and far between, I'm afraid, is that you give us that renewed sense of hope, and we've got to keep believing in ourselves. If we don't, who the hell else will?
Yes, well, I mean, all innovation comes out of a problem.
Sure.
So anything new, anything fresh that is born is the product of a problem. And so if you run towards a problem, you can solve that problem. If you run away from it, it's going to chase you like a bully and it's going to beat you. And so if we focus on our problems and we run towards them collectively, and that is a big problem in our country, I guess, is that we run at things not collectively. Yeah. So we are so divided and so split in how we come at problem solving. And if we just put differences aside, and there's far more that unites South Africans than divides them. So if we could just focus on what unites us, our wanting to educate our children, are wanting to have great healthcare, are wanting to have jobs, are wanting to iron out corruption or gender-based violence or crime. We'll solve those things. But it's like the Tower of Babel. You know, we all seem to be divided around things. So hopefully South Africans will start coming together to solve problems, and we are great problem solvers.
Mm. Yeah, there's a resilience that's also our biggest enemy in some ways, right, Pums?
It absolutely is. But, you know, when you talk about a country waiting to boom and so much unfulfilled potential.
Mm.
For you having come back and then built the business, because it was a big business.
Yeah.
When you arrived, I remember being in advertising.
Yes.
I remember a quote in, I think, Financial Mail or something, saying that, you know, you've built a runway.
Yes.
A big runway, and you want to land big jets.
Yes.
Do you think we still, and having come from Ogilvy, do we still have big jets to land on this runway here in South Africa? Because we don't have brands of our own anymore.
Yeah.
Even SAB.
That's an interesting question.
Even SAB doesn't, you know, it's now in
this. Yes. Yes. Well, we certainly do have brands of our own. If you have a look at certainly the largest client in my group is Standard Bank, the largest bank on the African continent and a South African brand. You know, if you have a look at one of the most famous advertising brands, if not the most famous that we have in our stable is Nando's, you know, a great South African brand that has gone on to conquer the world. So I think that when you look around, in certainly in terms of the telco space, and you look at the size and the scale of an MTN, and you have a look at our banking and various industries, absolutely we do. But where you are right is I don't think that people are investing enough in building homegrown companies. And we have astonishing companies in South Africa, from South Africa. You look at Discovery, look at Vitality. This is a country that innovates, Pumi, to such an extent that if there is a lack of belief, we need to find a way of engaging in a conversation to rebuild that belief. I strongly feel that. And the reason I say that is nothing has really changed in the country other than our attitude. Yes, our debt to GDP ratio has grown. But if you look at the situation we have been in as a country, certainly since 2008, what has really improved? You know, what has really gotten better? You know, there was state capture. Some people say we still have state capture in one shape or another. Yes, the Guptas are gone, but you know, how many people are in orange jumpsuits as a result?
How many are still on the list that the ANC submitted last week?
Well, there you go. But if you have a look at the underlying potential, what do we have? So let me unpack it for you a bit. We have world-leading agri right here in South Africa. Mm. We have world-leading banking, telecommunications, tourism, the creative industry. Here we are sitting in a world-class facility that you guys run, and we have freedom of speech, which allows you to do what you do every day.
Thank God for
exactly,
that.
Exactly, one of the last bastions. So I think that if you have a look at potential and what you can build, you always have to look at the underlying assets. And our underlying assets are profound. We're just not harnessing them correctly. And we also need to challenge government in terms of unnecessary bureaucracy, red tape, the stuff that actually holds us back, so that we do become much more investment friendly.
So I want to talk to you about something that you dropped into conversation yesterday. Mm. I hope I'm not jumping the gun here, but you also believe that mentorship is an important part of what the economy needs to be doing to feed back into itself to grow.
Yes.
And young people in this country may be in the lucky 40% who've got an opportunity to learn somewhere, to take on a small salary that maybe pays just their transport costs, but they can get in and start learning and have an internship and get ahead.
Yeah.
But mentoring, for those who have been in business for some time and people with the amount of experience that you have, is probably one of the most important pillars that will help these people to get ahead.
Yes.
Young, talented, hungry people in South Africa who are desperate for that opportunity, but once they've got it, they get abandoned again.
Mm.
And you know, they just have to kind of feel their way in the dark.
Yes.
Before they realize whether they're any good or not at something. So mentorship, let's talk about that for a second.
Well, I think there's active mentorship and I think there's passive mentorship. And so the big reason why I started my podcast,
yes, it started last week.
Last week, correct, which is again called Willing and Able.
Welcome to the podcast world.
Thank you. Good to be here. Was because I realized that I was and am at such an advantage in growing up as I did by having really smart, cultured, interested, good parents and grandparents. And what I used to pick up from them and their friends simply sitting around the dinner table, be it around medicine, because my grandfather was a medical man, be it around business, because my parents were business people, or academia, because my mom was an academic, or whatever it might be, I had all of this amazing and rich conversation. And so I thought to myself, because I've encountered it in business, you know, I employ many hundred people, and I think that a lot of people have got great educations perhaps, but don't get exposed to that level of conversation. So what I wanted to do was to create a passive form of mentorship where I would have fantastic, rich, varied conversations with multiple South Africans. That if you're listening to the podcast, the whole thing is about educating and dropping wisdom, so that throughout the conversation, people would be saying, aha, yes, I never thought about that. Maybe I could solve the problem this way or that way. Then there is, as you say, all of this experience that is out in South Africa. Now, people are forced to retire today because the world is ageist, somewhere between 60 and 65. Those people are mentally vital and they are physically vital and they are able to add so much value. So there is such an opportunity to unlock this dormant potential in South Africa where through online platforms and other ways of doing it, we can actually start engaging in active mentorship in South Africa. And that is something that I'm looking at very seriously right now. Because what have you got? You've got the 65-year-old who's run a company and now he's sitting at home or she's sitting at home trying to work out how to fill their day where they're these hungry and desperate minds on the other side waiting just to absorb all of this. And I think that if we can get behind mentorship as a country, you know, they say a rising tide raises all ships, and we can raise the country's ships. And I think that that is something that we should look at. I mean, one of the other ideas I've had for years and years is I've always wondered why, because we have a problem with orphans in our country insofar as these children are brought up or dropped off or can't be raised because of poverty in an orphanage. And then 100 meters down the road or 200 meters, you've got an old age home and those people are lonely and they are forgotten. And I think that when you look at combinations, why don't you build an orphanage together with an old age home? Because what you've then got is a sharing of needs and love, where old people love young kids and love pouring, you know, attention and affection and values and guidance. Because to be honest with you, most of these unbelievable values that we have in our country are from the older generation that are passed down. Mm-hmm. And these kids are just hungry. They're like birds with their mouths open, their beaks open, waiting for love, attention. So I think that if we start looking at problem solving entirely differently, but dare I say logically, we could come to fascinating new models.
Mm. I like it. I like it very much. All right.
It's election year.
Yeah. I knew you were going to go here.
We're 75 days away, I think.
Sure.
More or less. And it would be having a marketing man in studio and not having a conversation about the campaigns would be a missed opportunity.
Sure.
I know you're involved with one, but I'm still going to ask you. With the campaign, very subdued election, because in advertising, this time of year, this time of season is very, very big because campaigns are coming out, people are putting out messaging or should be.
Yeah.
But this year, for some reason, it seems to be very subdued other than a poster with the person's face, head and shoulders. There's very little of it happening. What do you make of why that is?
Well, I think a lot of political parties obviously have limited resources and have not wanted to, I guess, use their gunpowder ahead of announcing an election date. And I think that a lot of them have gone from a phase of awareness, because we have a lot of new parties in South Africa, almost too many new parties, to be honest, but competition is always good, I guess, to now an election campaign. And I think that we're going to see that transition kick in now, Pumi. I think people are now going to start saying, well, we've got a short, finite period of time, and best we get out there and we start telling people what we stand for. Because, historically, as you know, political parties are great at telling you how useless the other parties are in their own campaigns, as opposed to telling you what they actually stand for. They are not benefit-led, you know. A lot of them are lie-led. We managed to fool you into voting for us last time because we promised you all of the stuff. We know we haven't delivered it. We want you to forget about it, but hey, vote for us again. And I think that this time there is there's formidable competition from a lot of credible players, from a lot of people that have got established corporate histories that are entering politics to try and help the country, or former politicians that belong to other parties, you know, that are now in new parties. Some of them good, some of them absolutely dreadful.
Well, we'll speak to the first breakaway from the ANC.
Yes,
Bantu
Wolomisa, very first one
in just a short while.
And, well, second after the PAC.
Oh, that's true. But I mean, we're talking post 94. Sure. You want to be, I get you, historically accurate.
Hey,
give Robert Sobukwe his due. But Mike, who are you talking about and who are you watching most carefully?
So if you look at the latest polling, I don't think that it is entirely representative, by nature of polling as well, of what is likely to shake out. I mean, what we are seeing for the first time, and it is absolutely certain, is that the ANC has lost a lot of ground. And then when you look at it on a regional basis, you know, there's obviously the entrant of our former president, and what that's going to do in terms of disrupting KZN is going to be dramatic for the ANC specifically. But when you look at new parties, for example, like Arise Mzansi, when you look at people like Musi Maimane with Bosa, when you look at Gayton McKenzie, if you like, with Patriotic Alliance, mm-hmm. there are these guys that are coming up and that are out there and are in the field. And Songezo Zibi's Arise Mzansi, as I mentioned before, is one of those where they have considerable, you know, ground campaigns. They're out there, they're talking to people, they have something compelling that they're offering, Herman Mashaba's action essay. All of these are very viable new competitors that people will sit up and take note. And then you've got the DA, of course.
But before you go into the DA, a lot of people just dismiss these small parties and they say, well, they don't really have a role to play. They might be a kingmaker in a certain municipality.
Correct.
But generally they're outside the tent, and actually people should be talked out of voting for them.
Yes.
Because why waste in inverted commas?
And
I'm not saying this is true. This is the devil's advocate.
Yes.
That thought process was pioneered by a single particular individual whom I will not name, because I get so much flack for calling their shit out. But anyway,
so you obviously don't believe that. And you know, again, I heard the argument the other day from someone who I think is very wise about these things. Said that we are a country that's extraordinarily diverse. Mm. Obviously, we need as many options as possible. Mm. People can't even decide in this country what flavor of chips we want on the shelf.
We just want tomato sauce. Okay, sorry.
But there was a huge fight about this. I mean, we even came up on the show on Friday with Simpiwe. So, of course, we want lots of options. It's not a bad thing. And if you want to vote for a little party, you're going to the polls, you're voting. Of course, it counts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the ACDP. I mean, they're a small party, and I think they play a very valuable role, often as being, in my view, a moral barometer and voice in our country. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that at all. You know, when I see the Reverend Kenneth stand up and talk, or a Steve Swart, I listen to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. You know, the same with, you know, I think they've made a huge transition. I would have never historically spoken about the Freedom Front in an environment like that. But when you hear that, you know, the Corne Mulders and what they're saying, they speak a lot of sense.
I mean, we had him in here when they were starting the multi-party charter, and I was like, there's an adult in the room.
Correct.
That's true.
That guy knows what he's talking about. And every time I've spoken to Corne Mulders since then, I've thought, this guy
Why aren't we listening to him more?
And what we've been sold about him is actually nowhere near the truth. He's like putting the stupid kids' heads together and saying, you've got to make this work.
Mm. Correct.
I'm with you.
And so when you look at that, so where are we going? We are obviously going into a coalition government.
Yeah.
That is clear. You look at it and you think, okay, well, who are these coalitions going to be with? Is it going to be with a dominant opposition party, or is it going to be with a combination of sorts of these smaller parties? And I think that makes it very, very exciting, because what you do have for the first time in 3 decades is an opportunity for change. Now, you're not going to find more of a, you know, a juggling band than me when it comes to Madiba, or when it comes to, you know, the Oliver Tambos of this world and the Walter Sisulus and, you know, those great icons and legends. But those days are long past. I think what South Africa needs is the values that those people represented. But certainly in terms of new opportunities, you've got to look at who represents the values that I'm looking for. And that's not a party. A party is an inanimate object. It's people.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have a look at a lot of these people, and I think that is where a guy like a Sonkez or Zibi gets a lot of traction, because people say, I've read his book, Manifesto, and I've read his other book, and I believe that this is a good guy. And I think there are quite a lot of good guys out there. And if they're to get together and become part of that coalition, and I think it's also a longer game. I think 2024 is the lead up to 2029. But I think we're going to see sizable change here. I do think so. We're going to obviously see the usual players still at the table. There's no question about that. But those smaller parties, everything, you know, a tree, a redwood tree, a sequoia, starts off as a seed or a or a nut, or whatever it might be that grows this thing.
We don't have 900 years.
So,
a beanstalk.
Because you've spoken about Songezo and Rise Mzansi, and this is, and elections are also all about slogans and sloganeering.
Yeah.
You know where this is going. 2024 is our 1994.
Yes.
Right? When I first saw it.
Yes.
It was with Rise Mzansi, and I since know that it was a young man who was a T-shirt, all of that, which is a wonderful story.
It's their trademarked slogan.
It's trademarked. Do the EFF know that?
Yeah, because
I think they've been told. Does it make a difference?
Well, because, I mean, that hashtag.
Yeah.
On social media has really gained quite a lot of traction well. And in no small part because of EFFs using it, because they have a lot of they have a lot of bots, they have a lot of people on their social platforms who are incredibly active.
Yeah.
And so there are these two organizations using this one idea.
Yes.
It's interesting that it's trademarked and they've been told. So we'll see how that goes. But what kind of response has that slogan given, do you think, in terms of, you know, what is it yielding? Do people care about 94? Do the young people care about 94? They weren't there.
Yeah. Well, I think where it has resonance and traction is that people understand that 1994 is the birth of democracy in South Africa. And I think that everybody wants freedom, you know, freedom of movement, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of opportunity. And I think that, you know, I think there was a Syrian playwright who wrote a terrible line, a very shocking and brilliant line, but a terrible one. He said, as Syrians, we are condemned to hope. And I think that so many South Africans have been condemned to hope, waiting for the promise of 1994, waiting for the promise of Tutu's Rainbow Nation. And I think that what people are doing now is it's a renewal of that hope in an entirely fresh way for me. And I think that that's what people are gravitating around, and that's why I think so many people are plagiarizing it and passing it off as their own, because they've seen that it has real traction in society to say, it's possible again to change things. I think that's all it really does mean, and people are galvanized by that. Sadly, a lot of South Africans have given up hope. You know, when you look at the amount of people who are dormant voters or unregistered voters, sadly, apropos what we were saying earlier around people uniting around something, people remain divided. Let's see. Let's see how – I don't believe that. I'm not going to vote. I'm going to waste my vote. Well, actually, your grandparents and your parents fought damn hard for that vote. So don't stay at home. Use that vote. It's a gift. So I think it has traction. Whether or not it's a sustaining, you know, living in a perpetual state of hope, that would be a tragedy. because that's not what the country needs. The country needs action. The country does need change. Sorry, does need positive change.
Okay, so here's the best comment so far of the morning, and it kind of ties together a lot of the things that you've been talking about. This is from Tracy, who's been listening. She says, in the upcoming elections, never forget the only difference between a rat and a squirrel is marketing.
True story.
Who is, from the little bit that you can glean so far, selling the right message? You mentioned Songhezo, but are there others?
Well, firstly, I mean, my response to Tracy is that a rat lives in a gutter and a squirrel lives in an oak tree. And I think they're different places in which to spend your life, you know, whether you are scampering up a tall tree and jumping from trees to trees or you're running through sewers, I think you get a slightly different outcome. So that is my response. Yes, they're both rodents, but there are differences. And I think that those are the differences we need to focus on, is not sewer politics and not gutter politics, but oak tree politics, in terms of being able to ascend, to elevate, to look at the bigger picture from a higher distance, say, collectively, you know, and to build a forest, you know. And that's, to me, the thing that we need to do in this country. I do think that there is a massive opportunity for change if people would allow themselves to believe that and to do that. And we've got to see the rural vote. You know, I don't know what happened over Christmas when everybody went home and spent time with their parents and their grandparents and the conversations, because I think the hopes and aspirations of black middle class South Africa are very different today to what they were 20 years ago. And I think that there's a vibrancy in our economy, and there's a wisdom, and there's a knowledge, and there's a passion for change. And hopefully those conversations elevate people who are feeling desperate or forlorn or have given up to actually do something this time. I think it would be a tragedy to be caught or stuck and just to remain in that, you know, place of stasis, because you don't want, you don't believe change is possible. Change is always possible.
Well, that's a good place to leave that, but thank you. No, I think it's a good message, and I think it's one that we need to keep reinforcing, because it's very easy for people to slip into bad habits.
Yes.
It's like, I'll just have that one chocolate, or yeah, I'll just start becoming cynical and skeptical of everything.
Yeah, exactly right.
Good stuff. Thank you, Mike. It's good to see you, and thank you for coming to see
us. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Mike Abel, everybody. The podcast is called Willing and Able. You can find it on all good podcast servers. And what are you going to be covering there?
So yesterday I had a brilliant entrepreneur, Gidon Novick,
who
some people know. You know, he started Kalula.com,
exactly.
He's now got Lyft Airlines. I flew up to Jersey yesterday on Lyft, great airline. He's got Home Sweet Hotels, serial entrepreneur. Mm. He shares his entrepreneurial journey. Last week I had Mamukhai Makhlari, who is the executive chairman of Takealot.com Group. Mm. Brilliant lady, chemical engineer turned entrepreneur. Songhezo Zibi was a guest of mine, and he was talking about politics in South Africa. Nick Dreyer, who and his friend didn't know what to do with their lives, kind of stuck at mid-40s, decided to start Veldskoen, the brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been this unbelievable global success. Got a lot of exciting guests coming up. I had David Cromer in the studio the other day. We had a really rich conversation about South African culture. Next week is Joanne Smolin. She's an executive coach. She uses a tool called Enneagram.
Yeah.
I had the most unbelievable entrepreneur lady called Ayanda, who's doing incredible things with her husband in terms of educating communities. And she's also a seed investor, and she's got an accounting firm. I had Bali and Thule, she's coming up as a guest, also talking about elections. So there's a whole host, called Stephen Nathan is going to give financial advice, retirement advice, how to invest. So a wide variety of people that can, as we said earlier, about Gareth, about wisdom, just a blanket of wisdom that I'm hoping, like manna, to drop on South Africa.
Yeah, I like it. Thank you, Mike. Very good. Best luck with the podcast, and we will all be paying attention to that too. In a moment or two, we will get into the burning platform this morning with none other than Bantu Holomisa. Very excited to have him back on the show in our ongoing series on all the leaders of the political parties.
Ujenen.
or Janen. We'll remember. I've got to call him that. Mustn't get it wrong. Stick around, everybody. See you now.